if you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. I get your kicks on Route 66.
That's Nat King Cole's 1946 chartbuster celebrating America's fabled highway. Never mind that Cole would have struggled to get a hot meal or a bed for the night along much of Route 66 in that era of Jim Crow. It's 100 years this November since the old road down from Chicago to Oklahoma and then west through Arizona to the Pacific was designated Route 66, to come to be celebrated in song and prose as the road from ruin, a highway to adventure, to renewal and freedom. Celebrations are underway, but the historian, Dr. Daniel Malowski of Arizona State University, wonders what we're remembering here. Yes, small town America, but what about the danger, death and racism? Daniel is the author of the book Route 66 and the Formation of a National Cultural Icon, Mother Road to Mythic American Byway. Daniel joins me now from Arizona. Daniel, welcome.
Thank you.
How did this road come to be called Route 66?
The origin of the name actually originates with a dispute amongst the highway commissioners. They were trying to establish the first map that would outline all of the numbered highways for America's first highway system. And roads that ended in zero, so those numbers that ended in zero, like Route 40 or Route 60, were highly prized because they marked transcontinental routes, and all the highway commissioners of the various states thought that that would bring the most traffic and hence the most tourism business through their states. And Cyrus Avery, who is the commissioner of the Oklahoma State Highway System and a member of this federal board creating this map, proposed this highway from Chicago to Los Angeles to bring traffic through Oklahoma, but also to connect two of the most strong economies, regional economies at the time, the Los Angeles economy and the Chicago economy, with a highway that ran right through Oklahoma. He wanted the number 60 for that to designate it as a transcontinental route. Other highway officials objected, however, because it wasn't transcontinental. It was sort of half transcontinental. And so they proposed, well, it's largely sort of a connector route. Why don't you just call it 62? He didn't like that name, went searching for other numbers, and then found an unused number, 66, thought it sounded kind of nice, and picked that, and they agreed, and that is how it came to be.
Was it even a highway?
So initially, no. Most of these highways are actually more suggestion than reality at the time, particularly in the American West. So you had a movement called the Good Roads Movement, which actually started with bicycle enthusiasts. America had sort of a dreadful highway system, mostly funded by local entities. You know, large cities like New York or Chicago within the city limits would have nice paved roads. Those would sort of deteriorate into sort of dirt tracks out in the country. Early automobile adopters, first these bicyclists wanting to sort of bike out into the country or finding it hard to do so on these muddy dirt tracks, and then early automobile enthusiasts even more so. And so you have this grassroots movement that wants to create an American highway system. They start lobbying the federal government for this, and this takes quite some time, about 20 years before you get sort of real action. And that's when you finally get federal funding put behind building real roads. However, since none really existed outside of sort of the city limits of major cities, it took some time to build that out. So really in 1926, when this map is finalized, most of the roads outside of sort of major urban areas and certainly outside of the northeastern United States are more sort of dirt tracks or even sometimes simply just suggestions following railroad right-of-way and things like that where no road exists at all.
Even at its best, was it anything more than one lane each way?
So in many parts of the United States, yes, it was only one lane in each direction, and actually not paved well into its, you know, sort of history. Not into the 1930s does it, you know, through New Deal funding, does it get fully paved. And it actually becomes the first highway that is fully paved from end to end. So it does hold that distinction. But in most parts, since most of its route runs, you know, sort of west of St. Louis, Missouri, which is sort of a last major city you hit on Route 66 until you get to Los Angeles, it is simply a two-lane road. And certainly through the first several years of its existence, it's actually just gravel in the area.
Yeah. So within a few years of it being named Route 66, the Depression strikes and the great drought of that time, and it becomes an escape route.
Yes, very much so. You know, and it's, you know, it is a road that, you know, has a lot of symbolic meaning to it because of these sort of big sort of spectacle events that happen. Some of that is by design. So there actually is a promotional, you know, the Route 66 Highway Association is a group of civic boosters, you know, along the route that want to, you know, promote its use. And so early, actually before the Great Depression hits, they have these big events like the Bunyan Derby, which is this cross-country foot race that goes along, starts in LA, in New York, but actually uses Route 66 for half its route as a way of sort of promoting it. So some of those ideas of Route 66 being the highway to adventure kind of come from these sort of self-promotional aspects. But the idea of it being sort of a route of last chance redemption and escape and deliverance, much of that is the iconography of the Great Depression. And so you have the Okies, of course, who are fleeing the Dust Bowl. Oklahoma is the place hardest hit by that drought. They are fleeing along Route 66 to Southern California. Most of these people are agricultural workers, either former farmers who have lost their farms or farm hands. And so Southern California is one of the areas not hit by the Dust Bowl. Agriculture is still thriving. And so they're searching for sort of new work, redemption, new lives in California. And so you have, you know, iconic novels like The Grapes of Wrath, set along Route 66, documenting the plight of these, you know, Okies fleeing the Dust Bowl and seeking redemption in Southern California. And then you have the Works Progress Administration, through their artistic efforts, documented this as well. And so many of those iconic photographs taken by Dorothea Lange, for example, contribute to that imagery of Route 66 as this route of escape and redemption.
But it also worked, didn't it, in good times, to bring prosperity down the road?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it is a strong driver of economic development. And so many of these towns become fully oriented around, you know, automobile services, tourism services, you know, that is the lifeblood of their economy. And so in, you know, particularly in places where there isn't a lot of other economic activity going on, so many of the small towns, particularly in the American Southwest, so Arizona, New Mexico, places like that, the towns would almost be completely oriented around servicing travelers on the road. And so, you know, a small town that might only have, you know, 1,000 people in it in terms of permanent residents has an enormous number of gas stations. You know, it'll have like 25, 30, yes, maybe 50 gas stations, you know, and it's not the local residents that are using that. It is all the travelers on the road. And so you get this sort of oversized tourism, automobile services economy that develops around servicing Route 66 travelers.
And motels, because you can't get very far on this road. You have to sleep along the way.
Well, yeah, and there's, you know, there's a number of contributing factors to that. Certainly it is a two-lane road, and so you're not going to be able to travel at the kind of speeds you can travel on modern interstate divided highways. Automobiles, certainly through most of this time, are not as capable either. They don't, they're, you know, far more inefficient than they are today in terms of fuel economy. They need refueling more often. They're slower. They're prone to more breakdowns. And so you're not making a lot of progress, you know, each day in your travels. And so the motel industry literally grows up along roads like Route 66, starting with actually just sort of auto camps where people are kind of camping in their cars and have some basic facilities. And that evolves into motor hotels, motor carts, and then the kind of modern motels we know today.
So at the same time that it's being celebrated in song, this road is becoming choked with traffic, you write, and it becomes really dangerous.
Yes. In fact, Route 66 garnered the nickname Bloody 66 because it led the nation in highway accidents and highway deaths through most of the post-war period. And you have this massive shift of population that happens in the United States out of the Northeast and the Midwest to the American South, and particularly the American Southwest. And all of those people that are coming out of the Midwest are using Route 66 as the route to get to Southern California. And so just a phenomenal number of people are doing this. You know, at one point in the late 1960s, you had 400 people a day relocating to Los Angeles County every day over a period of years. You can imagine the volume that is on that road. And then, you know, through most of New Mexico and Arizona and the desert part of Southern California outside of Los Angeles, it's a two-lane road traversing mountains. There's no shoulders. You know, there's often little room to maneuver. And so head-on collisions were common. And one of the things I write about in the book, the little town of Williams, which is, you know, a very tiny town, again, you know, population around 3,000 people at its max, had a hospital with 8 trauma surgeons on staff, which is a phenomenal number of surgeons for a town that size. But they were servicing all of the traffic accident victims, you know, because that is the mountainous part of northern Arizona, and, you know, a lot of traffic accidents, a lot of severe traffic accidents, particularly because cars aren't as safe. It's the pre-seatbelt, pre-airbag era. And so you have this, you know, sort of phenomenal carnage happening on the road.
On Radio National, we're celebrating the centenary of Route 66, and I'm talking to Daniel Malarski, the historian of the highway. Daniel, tell me about the Negro Motorist Green Book. This is not something I had ever heard of.
So this is a guidebook, and there were a number of these travel guidebooks. The Green Book is the most famous, that is helping African Americans navigate travel along American highways during the segregation era. So this is something that actually was a national effort. So it wasn't something exclusive to Route 66, but the Green Book and other guidebooks like it were published for African American motorists to be able to safely navigate, you know, the American highways and be able to access the services they needed to travel. And so what it would list is, you know, basically they would verify, you know, where you could get gasoline, where you could, you know, stay in a hotel, what restaurants would serve you. And in many cases, there is a cottage industry that is documented in these books, because most of the, in many of the towns, most of the commercial establishments, commercial restaurants, you know, commercial motels, hotels would actually not refuse service. They would refuse service to African-American travelers. And so there were African-American residents in many of these towns that would open their homes to travelers and rent out a room and offer them a meal as a way of sort of accommodating them when the official accommodations were unavailable to them.
When did Route 66 become empty again?
So Route 66 is bypassed over sort of a period of time. And so it opens up, you know, in terms of becoming, you know, a road that is less traveled as the interstate highways are built out. And so there's kind of two aspects to that. There is the, you know, sort of building out of the highway sort of even before the Interstate Highway Act in 1956 is passed, where states like Illinois and Missouri sort of take it upon themselves to build out. So it's still called Route 66, but they build it out like an interstate with divided highways. And actually much of what is sort of current, for example, Interstate 55 is essentially the last version of Route 66 that existed, built out to interstate standards. You have that happening, you know, prior in the early 50s. And so, you know, much of the, you know, sort of twilight era of Route 66 is really sort of west of St. Louis, Missouri, where the highway, the new highway, in this case, Interstate 40, has to be built in sections. And so that is really a period from 56 to 1985, so about a 30-year period, where one by one sections and towns are bypassed in favor of the new interstate highway.
And what happened to those little towns?
So most of them suffer severe economic decline. There are a few winners in that. If you happen to be a small town that is on the new route of the interstate, the business area in your town tends to shift, but the overall economy does okay. And so Flagstaff, Arizona, as an example, their business center sort of shifts from downtown to the south of town, where the interstate comes just south of there. And Kingman, Arizona, is another small town that just happens to be connected on the route of Interstate 40 and actually benefits quite greatly from that. And there's a lot of distribution centers and other sort of highway trucking aspects that develop its economy and actually grows part of that. But most of the small towns, are bypassed. Either they can sort of see the interstate from their backyard, but there's no exit to their town, or the route simply bypasses them by, several miles, and there's, sort of no reason for travelers to go through their town anymore. And in many cases, they suffer, significant decline, population declines of 50% or more, most, if not all, businesses closing in the town, severe economic depression.
So what's there now? Is there a sort of a Disneyland version of Route 66?
So some of these towns do reinvent themselves around Route 66 tourism, which is really this sort of mythic version of Route 66. It's, there's sort of a handful of businesses that are trying to sort of recreate a really sort of a faux Route 66 experience. So they'll have a, sort of a diner that's offering these sort of 50s Americana burgers, French fries, shakes, gift shops. There might be one or two of the old, sort of motor court motels that have been restored, have the big sign, and it's sort of offering you a, stay in an authentic Route 66 motel and have, an authentic Route 66 meal, and then of course, buy trinkets of various types in the gift shops. And so that is sort of being marketed to these tourists. And actually, Seligman, Arizona, which is one of the towns that is bypassed completely by I-40, reinvented itself in this way. And it has this one street corner where you have that array of businesses. And it has a very, they've purposely kind of made it sort of a back to the 50s vibe, which has, some connotations in terms of harkening back to that era of segregation when not all were welcome. And then one of the ironies of that is that, a lot of their tourists are actually international tourists coming from all over. And so, it actually is possible to, and they have these junkets where people can fly into Las Vegas and get on the tour bus and be taken to Seligman and sort of have their full Route 66 experience and take their picture on the road and have their milkshake and then get back on the bus. And I've actually been in Seligman and witnessed this, where you'll see this like tour bus of, all Japanese tourists or all German tourists or some group like that getting off, and they have, sort of getting this sort of faux American history experience, completely disconnected from, their own native culture, but being marketed to them as, this kind of authentic experience.
Would they be there but for Nat King Cole?
Well, that whole cultural production around, Route 66 is really what creates the international allure of it. The song, the movies, the television shows, all of those, make their way out internationally, and really, kind of sell the more mythic kind of version of it as this authentic Americana experience, and becomes, quite popular. There's, sort of Route 66 enthusiast clubs in places like, Germany and the Netherlands.
Oh,
And
really?
yes, and there are publications about Route 66, That are never sold in the United States. That, there actually is a one that I document in the book that is sort of a photo essay coffee table book, but done by a Japanese photographer, completely written in Japanese, published and only sold in Japan. So, it does have this kind of, sort of cultural marketing around it that has an international aspect to it.
But what about back at home? Does anybody under 30 in the United States have particularly fond feelings towards this road?
Well, that's where we get into this kind of myth versus reality, and this idea of, sort of lived memory, versus sort of a more sort of marketed sort of understanding of it. There, when you go to one of these tourist towns, there are a couple of different groups you see. There certainly are the international tourists, but you will see older Americans who would have some kind of living memory, at least of the era of Route 66, if not the road itself. And then you will see some younger Americans who are sort of having that Disneyland experience. They have in some way connected to the, this marketing aspect about it and are sort of having that, kind of experience more similar to what the international tourists are having. But there also is this aspect of Route 66 kind of fading from American memory. And so I was doing a guest lecture at a university about Route 66, and it was a group of, kind of 18, 19-year-old, freshman, sophomore history majors. And I started talking about Route 66, and I saw these completely glass-eyed stares, coming back at me. And I finally had to stop and, kind of ask them, like, when I say Route 66, kind of what are your thoughts? What does that mean to you? And mostly I didn't get, sort of any response. And then one student kind of meekly raised their hand and said, "The movie Cars." And that was like the sort of strongest connection this young person could kind of make to Route 66, which in and of itself is a, sort of again, I mean, Pixar, completely Disneyland sort of derivative, distillation of Route 66. But then when you think about that movie, that was I think 2006, so that movie itself is 20 years old. So, the kind of lived memory, more sort of strong direct connection to Route 66 among a lot of Americans is simply fading.
Daniel, thanks for joining us on Late Night Live.
Oh, you're welcome.
Daniel Malowski, keeping alive the history of Route 66, author of Route 66 and the Formation of a National Cultural Icon, Mother Road to Mythic American Byway. Daniel's also written some beautiful articles in The Conversation, which you can look up at any time. This is Late Night Live.